His lotus feet. Mahi, the earth. Iyam, this. Swakrita, created by himself. Iva, indeed. Yasya, of whom? Chaturvida, of four kinds of living entities. Yatra, wherein? He, indeed. Bhuta Sarga, material creation. Sa, he. Vai, indeed. Mahapurusha, the supreme person. Atmatantra, self-sufficient. Prasidatam, may he be merciful to us. Brahma, the greatest. Mahavibhuti, with unlimited potency. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. On this earth, there are four kinds of living entities who are all created by Him. The material creation rests on His lotus feet. He is the great supreme person, full of opulence and power. May He be pleased with us. Purport. The word Mahi refers to the five material elements, earth, water, fire, and sky, which rest upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahatpadam Punya Yaso Murade. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, rests on His lotus feet, for the cosmic manifestation is but another opulence of the Lord. In this cosmic manifestation, there are four kinds of living entities, Jarayu, Ja, those born from embryos, Andaja, those born from eggs, Svetaja, those born from perspiration, and Udbijja, those born from seeds. Everything is generated from the Lord, as confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra, Janmad Asyayataha. No one is independent, but the Supreme Soul is completely independent. Janmad Asyayato Nandyad Itaritas Chartesu Abhigya Swarat. The word Swarat means independent. We are dependent, whereas the Supreme Lord is completely independent. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the greatest of all. Even Lord Brahma, who created the cosmic manifestation, is but another opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The material creation is activated by the Lord, and therefore the Lord is not a part of the material creation. The Lord exists in His original spiritual position. The universal form of the Lord, Varaja Murti, is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yojanamatam bhuvanam dayalur ulaghayan apyakarot pramatam swaprema sampat sudiyabhuteham Sri Krishna Chaitanya mamam prapaje. Let me surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the most merciful personality of Godhead. He delivers those souls who emerge in ignorance and offers them the greatest gift, love of Krishna, and thus makes them mad for Krishna consciousness. So that's a verse from the, it's found in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and it's actually from the verse composed by Rupa Goswami, and it's found in the Govinda Lilamrita, and I found it the other day. It's a very beautiful verse, and if we stop and think about it, it's just exactly the kind of verse we all need to meditate on. It's saying here how, get it back again, here we go. How Lord Chaitanya is the most merciful personality of Godhead, and He delivers those souls who emerge in ignorance. Well, what does it mean to be merged in ignorance? Well, what does the word merge mean in other words? Well, sometimes businesses form a merger. And that what happens is two companies become one company. And they're basically, their identity is, they're just one. There's no longer two distinct companies, it's just one company. Or when two rivers merge, like the Ganges and the Yamuna, they merge. That means they just come together and they're one river. And it's indistinguishable, one from the other. You can't tell at that point what's Ganges water, what's Yamuna water. They're just all there in the same place at the same time. So to be merged, for the soul to merge in ignorance, not a very good qualification. Actually, it's a disqualification for spiritual life. But it means that you're inextricably intermixed there with ignorance. So it's kind of like it's a real disqualification for spiritual life. But it's described here that Lord Chaitanya, as the most merciful personality of Godhead, he delivers those souls who are merged in ignorance. Right? And what does he do? Does he just give them mukti or, you know, help them out of the world of ignorance? Or no, it says he offers them the highest gift, love of Krishna. And does he just offer them any old love of Krishna? Like you could have love of Krishna in Dasharas, you could have love of Krishna in Sakyaras, you could have love of Krishna. Does he offer them? No, he offers them love of Krishna, the highest gift of love of Krishna and the highest rasa. It says here he thus makes them mad for Krishna consciousness. So he's offering love of Krishna. He's taking souls who emerge in ignorance. You know, there's hope for everybody here. Because, you know, in the Kali Yuga, everybody pretty much is merged in ignorance. Their consciousness is merged in ignorance. So, but here we have Lord Chaitanya who's taking souls whose consciousness is merged in ignorance, and he's offering the highest gift, love of Krishna, and making them mad for Krishna consciousness. So this is like an amazing benediction that this Krishna consciousness movement is offering. This is Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And here we hear this is what Lord Chaitanya's mission is being described here in this verse, very beautiful verse by Rupa Goswami. So we should always remember that Krishna consciousness is the perfection of life. And you know, it's like a rare treasure. It's an amazing, wonderful gift. And so we should always remind ourselves of that and be very, and just like if you were given some sort of like very precious jewel or something like that, how would you take care of it? Would you take care of it very kind of like carelessly? No, you would take care of it with great, you know, great attention. And you've got this precious, precious jewel. So you'd take care of it very nicely. You know, you wouldn't let, if you suspected somebody was a thief or something like that, you wouldn't even let them know that you had it or where it was. You wouldn't let them come anywhere near it. You know, you might only show it to your closest friends who could appreciate it. See, it's the same thing. We have to, you know, be like that about Krishna consciousness. This is like a great treasure. It's like a precious jewel. And we should therefore always remind ourselves of that. Try to associate with people who are thinking like that. We don't want to allow ourselves to become discouraged from that mentality. You know, we want to have that mentality and cultivate that mentality and become more and more, you know, fixed in that consciousness that this is this is the jewel of life. This is the perfection of life. It's the most important thing, great rare treasure. So we should associate with people who are also thinking like that. We should avoid the association of people who are going to, make it, discourage us from thinking like that. We should look for the association of devotees who have obviously already made some progress towards understanding that and try to serve them. We should do everything that's, favorable to engaging in devotional service, to help us progress towards further realizing that, avoid all those things that are not going to help us understand that. And really, at every moment, we should, as I said initially, we should be reminding ourselves of this point, and we should be praying for the mercy of, our spiritual master and the predecessor acharyas to help us actually get to have the vigyan of this point. You know, we have gyan, and the idea in Krishna consciousness is to go from gyan to vigyan, from theoretical knowledge to realized knowledge. That's the whole name of the game, so to speak. So we, have to constantly be, aside from just doing all those things I just mentioned, following, but also praying to, our spiritual master, the predecessor acharyas, for the mercy. Please, allow me. Please, allow me to become advance in Krishna consciousness. That's a very important point as well. And actually, ideally, we could be doing that from moment to moment. I know something I like to do myself is when I'm driving or just when I'm listening to Prabhupada speak. Of course, I'm listening to what he says, but, I'm paying attention to the content. But just like, you know, you hear Prabhupada is present in his picture, you know, that's an understanding, a devotional understanding. Well, I feel Prabhupada's present in his voice. For some reason, I feel a lot of connection with Prabhupada through hearing him speak. And so when I listen to Prabhupada's tapes, I listen to what he's saying, and I think about what he's saying. But sometimes I just kind of try to relax. And I'm listening to what he's saying, but I'm hearing the voice, and I just like pray to the tape. I know that sounds funny. But I'm hearing Prabhupada speak, and I'm feeling like this is Prabhupada. For me, Prabhupada's more present. I'm hearing him speak, and I even feel, as I said, I feel more connection, a greater presence of Prabhupada even than listening than when I'm looking at a picture of him. So I just pray, Prabhupada, please help me. Please, you know, you brought me this far. Please give me your mercy. Just help me. Let's go all the way. Let me just help. Please help me just do the whole thing. You know, just let me go all, just like exactly like that. I just pray to Prabhupada like that. And, I try to, as I said, at every moment we should be trying to. It's not an easy thing to do, but we should be trying to cultivate this consciousness where at every moment we're actually praying for the mercy, you know, remembering this point and praying for the mercy of the predecessor acharyas. Because actually, ultimately, it's only by their mercy that we can become perfect in Krishna consciousness. Let's see, I think I could find it without looking at my pages here. Found this very nice verse in the Adi Lila. Here we go. This is from the Adi Lila. I think it's chapter 11, and it's talking about the different associates, you know, Lord Chaitanya. This is in one of those chapters about the Chaitanya tree. It talks about the branches of Lord Chaitanya, the branches of Lord Nityananda. So anyway, so in talking about these devotees, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami makes this statement. He says, referring to all these different associates of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, he says, all these devotees had unlimited strength to deliver unobstructed, unceasing love of Krishna. By their own strength, they could offer anyone Krishna and love of Krishna. That's a pretty powerful statement, if you stop and think about that. You know, I'll read it again. All these devotees had unlimited strength to deliver unobstructed, unceasing love of Krishna. By their own strength, they could offer anyone Krishna and love of Krishna. And Prabhupada, in his purport, says, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura sung, Krishna se tomara, Krishna ditipara, tamara sakati ache. In this song, Bhaktivinoda Thakura describes that a pure Vaishnava, as the proprietor of Krishna and love of Krishna, can deliver both to anyone and everyone he likes. Therefore, to get Krishna and love of Krishna, one must seek the mercy of pure devotees. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also says, Yasya Prashada Bhagava Prashada Yasya Prashada Nagati Katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is blessed by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Then Prabhupada basically reiterates the point he just made in a few sentences ago. He says, by the grace of a Vaishnava or a bona fide spiritual master, one can get both love of Godhead, Krishna, and Krishna himself. So it's, you know, so important to take shelter of the pure devotee and pray for his mercy, because it's only by the mercy, actually, and Prabhupada didn't say it here, but it is, he's saying you can get it like that, but he didn't say it's the only way you can get it, but elsewhere he does make that point that really it's the only way that ultimately you can get love of Krishna. And you can engage in devotional service, follow all the regulative principles like that, but ultimately it's only by the mercy of the spiritual master that you're awarded love of Krishna. I'm going to try to find one more reference to that effect. Okay, here we go. Yeah, this is a verse from the 7th canto, chapter 9 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Prahlad Maharaj. He's praying, and he says, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O original spiritual master of the entire world, what is the difficulty for you who manage the affairs of the universe in delivering the fallen souls engaged in your devotional service? You are the friend of all suffering humanity, and for great personalities it is necessary to show mercy to the foolish. Therefore, I think that you will show your causeless mercy to persons like us who engage in your service. And Prabhupada points out in the purport, he says, I'll read it. It says, here the words Priyajanan Anusevatam Na indicate that the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of God, is very favorable to devotees who act according to the instructions of his own pure devotee. In other words, one must become the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. If one wants to become the servant of the Lord directly, it is not as fruitful as engaging in the service of the Lord's servant. This is the direction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who shows us the way to become Gopi Bharta Padakamalaya or Dasu Dasanu Das. One should not be proud of becoming directly the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, one must seek a pure devotee, a servant of the Lord, and engage oneself in the service of such a servant. The more one becomes the servant of the servant, the more one becomes perfect in devotional service. This is also the injunction of the Bhagavad Gita, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Vrajasya Ovidu. One can understand the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by the Parampara system. In this regard, Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakti Sanivas. Let me serve the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord, and let me live with the devotees. Janami Janami Hai Ayabilas. Following Narottam Das Thakur, one should aspire to be a servant of the Lord's servant, life after life. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also sings, Tumita Thakura Tomara Kukura Balaya Janana More. O my Lord, O Vaishnava, please consider me your dog. One must become the dog of a Vaishnava, a pure devotee, for a devotee can deliver Krishna without difficulty. Krishna se tomada Krishna diti para. Krishna is the property of his pure devotee, and if we take shelter of a pure devotee, he can deliver Krishna very easily. And then it goes on. What's this here? So Prahlad Maharaj is praying, my dear Lord, kindly give me shelter of your dear devotee. And Prabhupada also quotes here this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11:19:21. It says, engaging in the service of my devotee, this is Krishna speaking, engaging in the service of my devotee is better than trying to engage in my devotional service. So we have to try to take shelter of the pure devotee, engage in his service, pray for his mercy. And that's the most effective way to advance in devotional service, advance to the, you know, the goal of devotional service, which is pure devotional service and, you know, developing love for Krishna. And we're very fortunate because, you know, we've come in contact with somebody who, Srila Prabhupada, who's the guru of everybody within ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada has, you know, been accepted by the GBC as the Samstapak Acharya, you know, he's not just another Acharya. He's the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it's, you know, it's a GBC understanding that Srila Prabhupada is every member of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada is their guru. He might not be the Diksha guru, but he's the Shiksha guru. And actually, the Shiksha guru is extremely important. Prabhupada is every member of ISKCON's Shiksha guru. And he was an incredibly great devotee. This is on this point of like Prabhupada's greatness. There's a nice reference here I found in the Ancha Lila, chapter 17. Sometimes it takes a couple seconds to find these great references, but it's coming. I'll just have to do this one by memory, but it's making the point that in this particular reference that only a Mahabhagavat, a Paramahamsa, can deliver meat eaters, you know, convert meat eaters to devotional service. So if somebody is able to preach and, you know, convert a meat eater to become a devotee of Krishna, then that person should be understood to be a Paramahamsa, or Uttama Adhikari, or Mahabhagavat. So Prabhupada did that. He converted thousands of meat eaters. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's an amazing, exalted position. It's not easy to do that according to this, is like, now this, that was just from a statement by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, written 500 years ago, and here's Prabhupada 500 years later, not just delivering by his preaching one meat eater, but, you know, literally thousands. So Prabhupada, we're so fortunate to have come, you know, in contact with Srila Prabhupada and been taking shelter in his movement. And about, you know, on this point of taking shelter of the spiritual master, means, of course, you know, following his instructions, and that's what's really important, is to follow the instructions very sincerely. On this point, I found a very nice reference. Let's see if I do better on finding this one than I did on the last one. Yeah, that's a nice point. It says here, the spiritual master is not actually happy if the disciple brings him money. But when he sees that a disciple is following the regulative principles and advancing in spiritual life, he's very glad and feels obliged to such an advanced disciple. So that's an important thing to remember, you know, that Prabhupada was pleased when devotees, as he says here, just took the whole thing very seriously. Followed the regulative principles seriously and was showing signs of advancing in spiritual life. Says he feels glad and feels obliged to such an advanced disciple. And of course, aside from just following the basic regulative principles, you know, the devotional activities, chanting and so forth, the service is very important. And on that note, got a very nice reference here. Anyway, this thing is too. I'm going to have to learn how to use it. Use it for class. Forget about that thing. Anyway, so as far as pleasing the spiritual master goes, yeah, we have to follow the regulative principles. And also, you know, we have our service to perform. So in the seventh canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 6, text 24, is a very nice purport where Prabhupada says, preaching is the best service. You know, it's talking about different, you know, service in general. And Prabhupada says, preaching is the best service to the Lord. And Prabhupada makes this statement, that the Lord will be immediately and extremely satisfied by one who takes the preaching of Krishna consciousness. And he also said, he goes on to say, even if one is imperfectly educated, meaning even if you, could mean a couple things, it could be that you don't know the Shastras, that, you know, you're not really conversant enough in the Shastra conclusions, and it also can mean educated in the sense of culture, you know, that you don't know how to even behave properly. See, but it's making the point that even if one is imperfectly educated, if they, you know, take this activity of trying to preach Krishna consciousness, you know, give other people Krishna consciousness, one becomes the dearmost servant of the Lord just by the activity. And it goes on to say at the end of the thing that as one continues to do this service, not discriminating between friends and enemies, and it's just doing it as a matter of duty, trying to give everybody Krishna consciousness, one's mission in life becomes fulfilled. All right? So that's... you know, that's it. So that's a very encouraging statement about the importance of preaching. And then elsewhere in the seventh canto of chapter 14, text 39, Prabhupada makes the point that he says something. Well, let me see if I can find this one, because this one's really important. Too much nectar. I got too many good things here. Anyway. But he makes the point about how book distribution is even more important than than temple worship. And there's a couple, you know, nice statements about that. But ultimately, it was making the point, though, that in order for one to be effective in preaching, there's one purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhulila where Prabhupada said, one has to be pure. In other words, it's not just, I'll engage in this activity of preaching and even I'm imperfectly educated. The idea is you got to be imperfectly educated, might be there. That means you don't know the philosophy as well as you'd like to ideally know it or as you should. You haven't been a devotee that long, and so you're not, able to conduct yourself perfectly as a as a Vaishnav should. But the purity has to be there. The purity has to be there, which means, and the purity means strictly following the regulative principles and chanting the rounds, following, coming to the program. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, if that's not there, then one's preaching will not be effective. So that's an important point. So as far as today's verse goes, I'm not going to have time to really get into it, but there is this one point here about, talking about the four different types of living entities. And those born from embryos, those born from eggs, those born from perspiration, and those born from seeds. And pretty much devotees have an easy time with three out of those four. Embryos, eggs, and seeds. We all have direct experience of that. But it's kind of like the devotees were a little bit bewildered by this svedaja, those born from perspiration. They asked Prabhupada about that. And but Prabhupada was, firm. He clearly stated, as I said, I'm kind of running out of time, that, yeah, they're coming directly from perspiration. And, that was his firm conviction. So just one little comment on that. For an ignorant person like me, that's not difficult to accept because, it's inconceivable. How can matter organize itself within an embryo? If matter can organize itself within a seed, if matter can organize itself within an egg, if matter can organize itself within an embryo to come out as a living entity, why can't matter organize itself in perspiration to produce a living entity? It's a little bit more far out. It sounds like it. But it's just like, say I was asked to cook the deity's lunch, and which I really don't know anything how to cook. But if I had to cook it in the deity kitchen, that would be difficult. If I had to cook it in the back of the camper van I have, that would be more difficult. If I had to cook it on a Coleman stove as, in the front seat of the van as we were moving down the highway, that would be more difficult. But I suppose if you know how to do it, you could do it. You see, so it's in the same thing. Krishna, it's already inconceivable that matter will come together within an embryo and come out as a body. And maybe it's a bit more inconceivable that it could happen within an egg, and even more inconceivable that a seed. But so it's just like another step, you see. And Prabhupada did make this point. I'll just read this and I'll conclude there that, we shouldn't depend upon our experience what we accept as knowledge and what we accept as not, but what we don't accept as knowledge or what we accept as reality and what we don't accept as reality. We should just depend on the Shastras. And he made this comment. He said, don't try to see with your eyes, but try to see by ear. Shruti, Shastra Chakshus. You should accept as your eyes the Shastra, not your so-called eyes. See, so in other words, the Shastra says so, and we accept it. And even if we don't have direct experience of it, so what? And science, they don't acknowledge it. Well, we don't care. We're not worried about that. We just will accept what's stated in the Shastra. And if as we become purified, there's that verse, Atakshri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Graya Mindade Seva Mukhi Jevados Swayameva Spadate, that Krishna can't be understood, or this philosophy for that matter, with the blunt material senses. It's understood by purified senses, beginning with the tongue. When you engage in devotional service, your consciousness or your senses become purified, and gradually we're able to understand Krishna, and that means the philosophy as well. So these things, will become revealed in due course of time, and we shouldn't be too concerned or worried or upset if we're not experiencing, having like an experience of different statements in the Shastras or that are part of Krishna consciousness. It's just that we're not mature yet. We just have to, continue with the process. And as we get purified, we'll get further insight into how these things really are true. And it won't come necessarily like that, you know, but just like Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when you are enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then your knowledge will reveal everything, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So how does the sun light up everything in the daytime? Gradually. It's not like it's pitch black 1 second and the next second it's kind of like, you know, you're blinding light. No, it's just like teeny little bit of light, and then it just kind of gets greater and greater and greater. So like that. So we just have to be, you know, patient and persevere, continue with the process, and we'll get further insight into how these, you know, this and other things that seem kind of like difficult to understand from our present perspective, we'll understand how they are true. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Oh, good. We got a bunch of hands go up. Archdeep. Yeah.
Not being able to directly experience living entities being born from perspiration. As you know, you were doing the research yesterday.
Yeah.
I was on a morning walk at Prabhupada where the point came up and it was discussed. But so some devotees at that point, and still some devotees today, they have more faith in modern science than they do in what the Shastra says. But if they examine closely, like that video that Bhajanarayan Swami sent around recently, I don't know if you got it, where somebody went to a college and was interviewing the students and the teachers and asking them about why they believe science. And they were saying, well, because it's fact. But then when they were pressed, they had to admit after some time, even the teachers, that it's a belief. They believe that species turn into other species. It's not been proven. They don't have any experience of it directly. There's nothing they can offer to show that it really happened. They believe it. They accept it based on belief because it sounds right to them. It's belief. So the same scientists that you're bringing forward as being not accepting the Shastra, they also have based their acceptance of things on belief. They believe there was a Big Bang. They cannot prove it. They did not experience it. They believe that gradually species turn into others. And when you press them, they bring up, oh, well, Darwin's experiment in the Galapagos about finches. But the birds remain birds. They didn't become something else. They were isolated, and many different types of finches, they claim, came from one stock. But they remained birds. They didn't become whales. They didn't become humans. They stayed birds. So they don't have any proof that one species gradually turns into another. They have no such proof. They have a theory, and they accept it, and they believe it, but they cannot prove it. So we can say the same thing. We may not be able to prove to you that living entities are born from perspiration, but we accept it based on the Shastra. You're accepting it based on some scientist because he said so. That's your acceptance. That's your proof. You cannot prove it. We're accepting it based on Vyasadeva. Now, you compare the two. Compare Vyasadeva to some scientist that graduated from UCLA. Who are you going to take?
Yeah, they believe in a different parampara. Just an interesting comment on that point, how they, you know, they have their bias. They think, you know, they like us to think that, hey, we're completely objective, you know. Whatever the evidence kind of shows, that's what we go with. And if the evidence doesn't support something, well, we reject it. But it's not quite like that. I'll give you an interesting example. At least it was, I thought it was an interesting example for me. When I was up in Boise, Idaho, I was giving class, and I mentioned something about this, you know, Ian Stevenson. This man did a lot of research on children remember their past lives. So one of the people in the class was Gopal Hari, who's the younger brother of Radhika Ramana. They're the two brothers that were, you know, homeschooled by their mother up in Boise, Idaho, and they went on to both become graduates of Oxford University, PhDs in religion. Radhika Ramana was the youngest PhD in religion in the history of Oxford University, and now he's the youngest chairman of religion at the State University of Utah in Logan. He's the chairman of the Department of Religion there. His younger brother, Gopal Hari, wasn't the youngest, but he also has a PhD in religion. Anyway, so just to, you know, give you an idea, he's an intelligent guy. So he mentioned that when he was at Oxford University, they had this thing. Every second week, they invited a guest speaker to come. And the person would speak, and then, you know, there'd be like a whole room full of scholars there. And then they would ask questions, and a lot of times there'd be a heated debate. But there'd always be something, you know. Either they'd ask a lot of questions, or they'd argue with the person, or something. So on this one particular occasion, they invited this guy who was like a protege, you know, of Ian Stevenson. His name was Erlendur Haraldsson. He was from Iceland. I've seen some of his stuff. You know, the same thing as Ian Stevenson, just does the research on kids who remember their past lives. So according to Gopal Hari, he came, And he gave a talk about an hour and a half. He said he did a very good job. He presented all the strongest cases, you know, presented all the information, did it very nicely. And then at the end of his speaking, you know, the master of ceremonies said, okay, are there any, you know, questions or comments or anything? And there was nothing, silence. And it was just like, he asked a second, nothing. For 5 minutes, it was just dead silence. And then it just, and then he said, the MC said, okay, well, we'd like to thank Mr. Haraldson very much for coming. It was a very interesting talk, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. And everybody just got up and walked out, you know? And I thought to myself, this is proof. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know where the heads were at, but, you know, it's kind of like, because it didn't go along with what they're used to thinking. It blew their mind, basically. Either they felt they understood what he was saying, and they just felt, I'm not even going to dignify this guy's presentation with a response. Or I'm not even going to dignify it with a complaint. Either that, or they just kind of like just were too. They just couldn't deal with it, you know. But see, so you know, they have their bias, they have their prejudice as well. They're not completely objective. That's what they like us to believe that, but it's not the case. And Drew DeCarma did a lot of work on that. You know, this whole idea of the knowledge filter. You know, they have their biases too. Yeah, question, sorry.
Thank you for a very Krishna conscious class, Prabhu. As far as your comment about the voice of the pure devotee, it's confirmation in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 20, verse 25. My dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee.
Yeah, thank you. That's beautiful. Isn't that the quote that's on the jacket cover of all they used to have the tapes, you know, Prabhupada ministry, and I think they have that one on it, all the jacket covers there. That's a beautiful quote. Thank you. Yeah, Prabhu.
Arable Prabhu, thank you for your class. I just want to remember that we have a close before when we want to make a devotee surrender that. This is Krishna consciousness. It's a bottle of honey. I can tell you all about the honey, but until you dip your finger in the honey and try it and taste the sweetness, you won't find it. So the whole thing, that's our close to make them shave their head and surrender, right? So I was looking at you, and every time I see you, you're actually very vigorous. Where are you going? I'm going to go out and distribute books. You're always walking with energy. You're very enthusiastic. And I know you. You've been in the movement more than 30, 32, 35 years. And you've been distributing books. So the question is, what makes you do what you do? For 30 years, more than 30 years. What's that? And maybe not more than 5 statements.
I'll give you a quick one.
Okay, a quick one.
I think that this is certainly the best thing that I've been able to come up with, and I feel that this is the absolute truth. You know, I started out, by Prabhupada's mercy, I just came in contact with the Krishna Consciousness Movement by getting a book, and I had a really good experience just reading the book. Then I went to the temple and I had a good experience just, you know, meeting the devotees. I liked what I heard. And then the first Sunday feast I went to, I was marching around my room chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And I felt like I experienced a higher taste, a taste for chanting. I was relishing the transcendental sound vibration. Good experience, in other words. So it was good philosophy, good experience. You know, I joined practically the next day. And I started practicing it and had other good experiences along the way. You know, once again, you know, taste for chanting, taste for this and that. And then, you know, as years went on, I came in contact with this other information, like things like Judhakarma and Sataputta came up with all this empiric evidence that supports at least certain aspects of our philosophy, like the eternality of the soul, and the children remember their past lives. So, you know, I have a lot of conviction that this, if anything's the absolute truth, this is where it's at, Krishna consciousness. Certainly the scientists don't have are not presenting an accurate picture of reality, because they believe when you die, that's it. They think that's the end of everything. That's obviously not the truth as far as I'm concerned. So if there is life after death, I think Krishna consciousness is presenting the correct and accurate picture of reality. Not science, not Christianity, not Judaism, not Islam, not anything else I've been able to come, not Buddhism. This is where it's at. That's why I'm trying to be enthusiastic about it, because I'm going for the gusto. Go for the gusto, that expression? This is where it's at, as far as I'm concerned. This is the absolute truth. So why not just give it everything? Just go for it. Try to, as I said, in one line, praying to Prabhupada, please help me go all the way. Please help me do the whole thing. I'm taking your word for it. I'm trying to take this whole thing in good faith, that this is the absolute truth. This is really what life's all about. And please help me just sincerely, apply myself, practice it, and progress towards actually, achieving the goal of Krishna consciousness, pure love of Krishna. Amala Bhakti. Give the mic to Amala Bhakti there. Oh, I don't know.
So thank you very much for what you just said. It's very inspiring and helpful to all of us. We were talking about, as Prabhupada often says, why do you want to see God? Basically, you seek God through hearing. If you listen very carefully to what the Lord says, gradually He will reveal Himself to you if you have faith in those words and if you practice what He states in those words. So there's a kind of a funny story came to me. And the professor, he was lecturing at one of the universities, and big crowd of students there. So finally, when he finished his talk, he said to the students, "Has anyone here ever seen God now?" So everybody shook their head and went like this. He says, "Well, that proves it. You haven't seen Him? There is no God." He says, "Has anybody ever heard God?" And everybody shook their head. He says, "Well, that proves it. There is no God. Has anyone ever touched God?" And everyone shook their head again. "Well, there you are. There is no God." So one student, he raised his hand and he said, "Can I say something?" He says, "Yes, come right up." Professor thought he was going to support the point. So he faced all the students, and he looked at the professor, then he looked at the students, and he said to the students, "Has anyone ever seen this professor's brains?" And everyone went, "No." He said, "Well, that proves it."
Thank you. Sachin?
It's a lot of nectar here. It's good to be in Bhagavatam class, a lot of nectar. So, Prabhu, at the beginning, when you start speaking, point that you may call my attention, that's actually in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he mentions that any one of the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is capable to deliver you, to free you from this material world and give you love of God. So, just a comment that I'm making, that actually in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a story when Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip, he was there, and there was one devotee who was very famous, renowned, eloquent speaker, and very, very attractive. Many people will come to hear from him, thousands of followers.
Mm-hmm. Devananda Pandit?
Devananda Pandit. Yeah. But he had a fault. He, at one time, he committed an offense to a pure devotee of Krishna, Srivas Pandit. So then later on, This same devotee, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't consider him a good speaker because he wasn't mentioning the key word like bhakti or in the Bhagavatam. Mm. He wanted to strangle him. So later on, this same devotee went to meet a pure devotee, O Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bhakreshwara Pandit. So the conclusion is that you just take shelter of the pure devotee and he will show you God. We cannot see God, but through the pure devotee, Lord Chaitanya got attracted to Devananda Pandit when he started doing service to Bhakreshwara Pandit.
Yeah, that's a nice point.
So that's another statement famous by Lord Chaitanya when somebody asked him, how can I make advancement? Asat Sangatyaga e Vaishnava Chara. Two things. Serve the pure devotees, chant Hare Krishna, and stay away from the non-devotees. That's the most difficult thing for our practitioners because we have family members, we have jobs to do, we have so many things and we don't know how to combine those things together. And people wonder, how can I make advancement? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes two points. Asat Sangha Tyaga, don't associate with the non-devotees and serve the pure devotees. So...
yeah, I'll give this some... I'll read one thing, just in relation to that. This is from a purport. Prabhupada says, one should not think that the Kshetri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally present 500 years ago, only his associates were liberated. Rather, Srila Narottam Das Thakur says that anyone is a Nitya Siddha if he acts on behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by spreading the glories of the holy name of the Lord. We should respect those devotees preaching the glories of the Lord as Nitya Siddha and should not consider them conditioned. And even, in other words, even the modern-day followers, it's, you know, could possibly be, you know, taken as Nitya Siddha, associates of Lord Chaitanya, Nitya Siddha devotees. So I just mentioned that because, you know, that we have the Prabhupada Festival coming up, and as Swavasprabhu mentioned yesterday morning, right after that we have some sort of, like, meeting where, like, a lot of our leaders are coming, you know, yes. Jayapataka Maharaj, Bhajan Narayan Maharaj, and Ramapada Swami, and you know, these devotees, they have like perfect track records pretty much. They've been serving Prabhupada heart and soul for like 40 plus years, and who knows who they are? You know, so probably it's, you know, there's an expression, if you're going to err on the side of safety, you know. So, but better to kind of like give too much respect, and you know, we should, this is an opportunity, in other words, what I'm trying to say. We should be thinking that way. These pure devotees are coming here to our temple. Let me try to do everything I can to serve them and to try to get their mercy. You know, that's a good way to be thinking because it's that's our philosophy. Yeah.
And one thing, not to commit offenses. Because
not to commit offenses, because it's the opposite.
Yeah, two opposite things happens. He displeased, Lord Chaitanya was so displeased when this devotee committed offenses to his pure devotee. But on the other side, later on, he made it up by pleasing one of his pure devotees. So the whole point is just... serve in a humble way.
Yeah. Don't try to take the opportunity to serve all these nice devotees, get their mercy. Okay, Guntra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.